Welcome to Insights on Social Connections. My name is Jim Feeney. I'm a CJNU 93.7 FM volunteer, and I'm the co-host of Insights on Social Connections. Now, this program airs once a month, and it's usually at noon on the last Wednesday of the month. This month, we're a day early, because tomorrow we're going to be preempted by a Goldeyes game. But we'll be back on our regular schedule next month, and I'll talk about that towards the end of the program. Now, this program that we're calling Insights on Social Connections, what is it? Well, it's part of the ongoing Insights on Aging Partnership, the programming that we at CJNU do with the Manitoba Association of Senior Communities, the MASC. This program, a particular program, Insights on Social Connections, also involves active aging in Manitoba. Now, what we're doing here in this program is talking about new programs that are being set up to help keep older Manitobans, those of us who are members of the 55-plus demographic, to keep us active and connected to the world around us. Now, joining me today on the program is one of the other co-hosts of Insights on Social Connections. Linda Brown is the Executive Director of Active Aging in Manitoba. And speaking of active aging, Linda, you've just got home from a very active week, the Manitoba 55-plus games in Brandon. How'd it go this year?
Actually, it went really well, Jim. We were really lucky with good weather and great participation.
And what's the best part of that? The actual competitions are a big thing. A very good friend of mine from CJNU, from the past as well, Gary Moyer, took particular pride in pointing out to me that he won 2 gold medals in track.
That's
this
right.
Year,
I did see his name on the list. I didn't get a chance to see him participate, but I did see him. And yeah, that's the best part, is that to see the participants afterwards walking around with medals around their neck. They're so proud. But you know, all in all, it's a very friendly competition, but it sure brings out the competitive spirit in a lot of people.
Oh, I can imagine. But that's all part of the connecting, though, isn't it?
It is, exactly. That's always the great part about the games, is we see a lot of participants year after year, and a lot of it is because they've made connections with maybe, for example, other people that participate in the track or the golfing or whatever the activity is, and they renew old friendships every year at the games.
Now, that's the physical part of it, the athletics. That's good for people like Gary, who is very athletic. What if you're somebody like me who is not? Is there a place for me at the 55-plus games?
Oh, yeah, there certainly is. In addition to the more physical activities, we do have a whole arts and crafts and cards section. So that would include things like, bridge, whist, cribbage. We even had a Scrabble tournament this year that we haven't had for a couple of years. And then we have a whole arts and crafts section where people can enter, whether it's their quilting, their woodworking, whatever it is, or their oil paintings. So it really does open it up, and that's our goal, is to be very inclusive, and that's one way to do it.
There are also volunteer roles, are there not?
Yes, there are many volunteer roles. Typically for games, we need about 150 to 200 volunteers. So, yeah, with over 1,000 participants, we need that many volunteers every year. So, again, we see a lot of local volunteers, but this year it was interesting. There was quite a number of volunteers from Winnipeg who came out to Brandon for the 2 or 3 days, stayed overnight, made a whole, little holiday out of it, and volunteered at different venues, too, which was really interesting to see.
So a great success all around.
Yes, it was very
That's
successful.
Great to hear. Now, Connie Newman from the Manitoba Association of Senior Communities is usually here. She's the other co-host of the show. She can't make it today, but what we do have, I'm now going to introduce our two special guests for this particular episode on Insights and Social Connections. Now, as we've just heard, there are tons of activities going on in the province intended specifically for seniors, but all too often as we get older, we lose touch with many of the people and activities that we may have been connected with in the past. Now, our two guests today are people who work in new programs that are being developed to help 55-plus Manitobans keep active and connected. Stacey Boone, who we're going to hear from in a moment, is working with the Manitoba Association of Senior Communities and is leading the development of these new programs. With her is Colleen Tackleberry, like the skates, isn't it?
My husband's grandfather was the founder of Tack Skates.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow. All right. Interesting trivia. And Colleen is a seniors resource coordinator. She works out of the Transcona, out of Transcona. I'm an old railroad guy, so I was going to say out of the Transcona shops, but your focus is much wider than that. And we'll be talking to Colleen about actually carrying out the connecting, because that's her role in all of this. So Stacy and Colleen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so
much.
I
look forward to hearing from you. Stacy, I'd like to start with you then. Social connections is what we're talking about today. It's the name of the program. But it actually has another name. It's got a second name, social prescriptions, which describes what's going on as well. And that's because Manitoba's medical community is a critical player in this entire concept. And that's exactly what your focus is on. So I wonder if you could tell us about how do Manitoba doctors and the wider medical community fit into social prescribing and social connections?
Yeah, my pleasure. I think you said it really well already. I think it's the critical connection. I think if you think back to prior to COVID, we had individuals 65 plus and over identifying loneliness as something that really impacts their health, right? So when you talk about connection in community, we want a social prescription, not another prescription that you fill at the pharmacy. So our hope is individuals who are meeting with doctors or nurse practitioners in the medical community can be seen as somebody who might benefit from being socially connected through meal programs, through exercise programs, through transportation programs, just to increase their wellness in regards to their own health. And we find that through doctors and nurse practitioners, that we're able to have a doctor identify something, a need that is not a prescription that's filled at the pharmacy, but something that can be filled in our community.
Now, this kind of thing has probably been happening on an informal, kind of almost happenstance basis in the past. What's different now going ahead?
I think the difference now is there is more opportunity for connection, and we're seeing that more people, older people, would like to feel connected in their communities. So it's not a new subject, but it's a newer way to look at a healthier way to live, right? I think if you acknowledge that the more you feel connected to people in community, or you have a purpose for waking up in the morning, you have an increase in life in general, right? You might notice that you're going to the doctor less because you're now meeting over coffee or tea, and you're airing some of those issues that you might be experiencing that you might have gone to the doctor for.
Linda, you wanted to add to that?
Well, I was just thinking back to our first program a month ago when Dr. Rutledge was here, and he talked about how this is not a new concept in the medical community, but something that's being kind of revived and seeing it as an aid for the family physicians, right? Not another task for them to do, but a way that they can help their patients even more.
Do you think maybe that some people rely on going to the doctor, going as a form of social connecting?
Yes, for sure.
I would say that's a fair statement. Yeah. And our role right now, right, is to have social prescribing be talked about, right? We want the grassroots. We want you, the listener, to participate in this movement. That means that you don't want to have another piece of paper given to you for a pharmacist, but you want another piece of paper that may be connecting you to resources in your community that will improve your social engagement, your health, and your well-being overall. And then have that medical community embrace both of those together.
Now, this is a program that's under development. What stage are you at?
Well, we're 2 years into a 4-year funding, so we're working on outreach right now. So some of us are reaching out to our doctors and our nurse practitioners in certain communities. There's a few of us who are trying to blanket the community. And so we're at the beginning stages. Colleen and I are thankful enough to feel connected with some colleagues. We've both worked in a community area for many, many years. And so with collaboration, you're able to have extra supports, extra pushers to the program itself.
And as you go out into the Manitoba's medical community, what kind of a reaction, what are the doctors and the other health practitioners saying when you talk about this idea or this concept?
Well, I think it's another tool in a toolbox, right? So we're trying to help doctors and nurse practitioners feel that they also have resources that might be out of their reach or their time constraints. We want them to navigate towards our senior resource coordinators who have all of these wonderful programs that they can feel connected to. And it also, I think, would empower our medical community to feel like they don't have to have all the answers.
And why is that?
Well, I think that's a lot of pressure, right? I think we're all have our own feelings about what the medical care system looks like right now. And so we're just trying to offer it some help. And so we want doctors to not feel alone in helping the community, in particular our older population, who might be more isolated and less forthcoming in their needs of socially connecting to others. You might have an individual who hasn't had a conversation with somebody all day but at the doctor's office, right? We want to increase that well-being, that overall life, just the overall life of anybody, right? Like to feel socially connected in community and feel a purpose and just feel like they're being heard.
So the doctors themselves don't have to have all the answers. They don't have to say, well, here's the number you call. You can call if you want to get connected with somebody like a driver or somebody who, a sports activity. Mm-hmm. This is basically a way to make that, to facilitate it for the medical profession and make it more efficient.
Right. And so we've tried to kind of streamline that process through an electronic medical record system, right? So we have a referral form. It's very basic, and that was our purpose, right? We don't want you to dig and dig and dig. We want you to think of social prescribing, get this one-page checkbox, and then it's sent directly to the community senior resource coordinator. And so it's kind of a handoff. It's also in collaboration. It's working together. So we've created it, and some of our medical care systems in Manitoba already have their electronic medical records up and loaded, so it should be as easy as it would be to fill a prescription for the pharmacy.
That's quite an improvement, isn't it?
I think so.
Linda, we talked about this last month with Dr. Rutledge as well, with the pressures that are on doctors and the entire medical system right now. Anything that helps them do the things they want to do to take care of their patients is going to be an improvement, isn't it?
Exactly. And as Stacey said, it's another tool in their toolbox. And, you know, a lot of times, and Dr. Rutledge mentioned this as well, that the family physicians might not even know these resources. They don't know who to talk to in the community. It's not part of their education. And if they maybe have happened to live in the community themselves, they might know. But that's what we're finding, that a lot of family physicians do not know their senior resource coordinators, for example, in their own area. So that's the connection that we're trying to make for them as well.
Their lives are so taken up with their jobs.
Well, exactly. And we all know how limited the time is when you see your physician, right? So this is another quick way for them to actually make that referral, make it as simple as writing a prescription for a medication.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So Manitoba's medical community is a critical player in this concept, and no doubt about it. But as you know, they say, the devil in all of this is in the details, and the detail, like, I mean, the objective is to connect people with places that are going to do them good, that are going to help them improve the quality of their lives. So you mentioned this a lot, Stacey, about the community resource
Senior resource coordinator.
Yeah,
they're like the link, the link in our chain. So we have our medical care system, mm-hmm. we have another piece of that chain, and that links to our senior resource coordinators or navigators. Sometimes that name changes dependent province, or in rural or in Winnipeg, right? So
that's where the connections are actually made, the senior resources coordinators. They're the people that actually do the coordinating. And that leads us to our next guest today, Colleen Tackenberry, who works out of Transcona. That's your job, isn't it, to actually do the connecting? And you've been doing this for a while.
I've been doing this for about 20 years.
Wow.
And it's just a joy. because you come across people who are so isolated and so just in need of a chat, a connection with another human being. And when you can help provide that, it's just a joy. And you just see people blossom. They come out of that isolation where they're trapped and they're feeling depressed, and they just blossom. And it's a wonderful process. But what social prescribing has done is it's opened another door, because if I have to find all these people on my own, it's very difficult because they're so isolated. They're not going to phone up and say, hey, do you have a program for me? No, they're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. But in getting the referral from the doctor or the nurse practitioner, I have the name and I have the contact for that person. I can phone them. I can do an initial phone conversation with them, see what they're comfortable with. Some of them are comfortable, and I can immediately go and do a home visit with them and sit down and say, you know, this is the things that's going on in our community here. What do you think you would be interested in? And some of them are not comfortable with a home visit right away, but I'll say to them, well, can I phone you back in a few weeks? Can I just check in on you? And they'll say, oh, yeah. And so I've got a person that I'm working with right now. I've phoned like quite a number of times already, and just enjoy having the conversation. Mm. So it's really quite exciting to me. It opens a whole new avenue of those people who aren't able to pick up the phone for themselves, but then I can reach out to them. And working, the other piece of this is that I've always worked. Doctors have often in the past, if they've known about us, have made referrals, but it's been, you know, more informal. They've given their patient my number, and the patient has phoned. Mm-hmm. But now it's more formal, and so I know who the doctor is, and I can give feedback to the doctor, and so that they know, okay, so this person has been contacted. This is what we've hoped to, progress with. And so they have that information. So maybe next time when that person comes in to visit the doctor, they will see, this person went to yoga. And so they'll be able to discuss that with them and encourage them. So it becomes like a two-way street.
It's kind of a feedback loop in this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Colleen really touched on something there about the word safety. Right, so we're working with an already vulnerable population who might already feel vulnerable for advocating, or someone has identified something, or they just aren't there yet, right? So you have a referral from social prescribing at the doctor's office where they feel safe. They are the patient in the office with the doctor, and the doctor is sending that referral to Colleen. There's already a bit of a rainbow of trust, right? So when Colleen's phoning, it's not a cold call. It's more of a warm call, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to acknowledge safety. I think we all know about phone scams and computer scams. And so If you have Colleen phoning to show empathy and concern and interest, you know, you might have somebody on the other line who is an isolated senior who doesn't know if they should trust.
Right. So just to add on that, too, is that the patient is giving their consent to the physician to make this referral in the first place. So, again, building up that trust and knowing trust. Where that phone call is coming from.
So everything's transparent. I mean, people know what this is all about, and it's somewhere where even if they're kind of nervous about the situation that they're in, they at least have some level of trust in the people that they're talking to get into it. Yes, Colleen?
Yes, I have then the name of the physician. So I can say, your doctor has asked me to give you a call. And so then they know that, so this person is legitimate.
Okay. I wonder if we just take a step backwards. I'm just wondering, or step back, maybe not backwards, but back. I'm just wondering, how do people end up in this situation where they're so totally isolated that they feel that they're not part of a community anymore, and that even though they may not be looking for ways to reconnect, it's to their benefit if it happens. Who wants to take that one on?
I'll talk a little bit about that. I think one of the major things that happens for people is they may lose a partner. Mm-hmm. And then maybe they've not been the driver in the family, and so there's a beautiful car parked in the garage, but they can't drive it. And so suddenly, where you were going as a couple, you're no longer able to go because, you know, you don't have your partner, but not only do you not have your partner, but you don't know how to drive. Mm-hmm. And so you're very limited on what you can do. And that can really form a lot of isolation.
Yes, Linda?
Well, and also mobility changes mm-hmm. as people get older. Sometimes that's a challenge as well. So now it's not as easy to walk to the local community club or whatever maybe they were doing before. So it's easier to stay at home, and that's what happens. Then it becomes just that, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. They're more comfortable at home, so they become isolated. They're not seeing the people anymore that they used to. And we knew pre-COVID that, you know, there was a lot of isolation for older adults. That just really emphasized it. And even now, a lot of people are still hesitant to get back into their regular programming, and maybe mobility has changed, or like they've lost a partner, they don't have the transportation. Maybe their families moved away who used to drive them to activities as well. So there's a lot of reasons how people can become isolated.
And that's kind of a feedback loop on itself. Like on its own, it's not going to get better. It can reinforce that isolation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes,
and it just precipitates. It just keeps getting worse and worse. You know, like one of the things that we noticed during COVID, we had to shut down our meal program. Mm-hmm. And so now we're trying to get them to come back and dine in. Well, they have all kinds of excuses for not doing that because people get into a habit. And so, you know, one of the reasons, well, we don't have to get dressed if we just come and pick up the meal. And so, you know, like we just get comfortable in doing what we're doing. So in trying to get people to come out, and so in working with the people that are socially prescribed to me, it's not a one-time shot. It's working with them consistently, so you're building up trust and getting them to come, finding something that's of interest to them. And so that, you know, that takes a little while. I've had some successes that I'm just thrilled about because, as I said before, I just see these people blossoming and becoming who they are. And, you know, one of the folks comes out to our vision impaired group. And that's a wonderful group because all the people there really care about each other and they support one another. And as a result of this person being able to get there, encouraging her to come, and she actually was able to do that, she has made a whole bunch of new friends and people that really care and understand, you know. And another person is coming out to our monthly dine-in and entertainment and dinner, and she's just starting to really feel. When I first did my first visit with her, she cried all the way through the visit, and now she's coming out and doing social activities with us, and it's wonderful. Like it just warms my heart every time one of these things happen. So but like I say, it's not a one-shot deal.
There's no magic button, no magic potion here.
No.
Very much a process, but it can make that much difference.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, Stacey?
I was just going to say, I think what Colleen's saying is social prescribing and feeling connected to others in their community allows them to live safely and independently in their community. And that's what's important, right? So it's trying to get people to feel more comfortable with the uncomfortable.
But that connects them back to that world that's out there and to the people around them.
Exactly.
And that makes a difference.
Yeah.
So in a case like you just mentioned, that woman, I'm willing to bet, is not crying every time she talks to you anymore.
No.
It really does make that.
And it's quite interesting because I'll phone and say, oh, you know, this is going to happen. And initially she would say, oh, well, maybe. Mm-hmm. And now she's, okay, what time? And so
trust.
So that's really wonderful. That makes me think, okay, this whole process works. So we have something really golden here that we're working with.
So it connects people to that world that's out there, and I think that sort of fits into what this next song is. It's a wonderful world if you access it.
Yes.
So it's a wonderful world out there, and but you have to be part of it, and you have to be able to connect to it. And Colleen, I wonder if I could ask you, I mean, you've been doing this job of connecting people to activities and to programs that they could benefit from for 20 years now. And we know Transcona is a pretty tightly knit community. Everybody pretty well knows everybody else. There are a lot of other people anyway, and what they're up to. Why are some people reluctant to, you know, you're out there, but you mentioned that people don't always connect you directly. Sometimes they have to be encouraged.
That's correct. I think no matter what age we are, some of us are shy, and it's difficult to come forward on our own. If we have a buddy, I find often many of the programs that we operate out of Transcona, they'll come with a buddy, and that's really great. But not everybody has a buddy, and so sometimes people just get very isolated and don't reach out on their own. And I think a lot of it has to do with personality. There's other reasons, you know, like we were saying before that. You know, sometimes they don't have the means to get places. Sometimes they don't have the mobility to get places. But I think a lot of it is dependent on personality. And you know, maybe we've had a lot of losses as a senior. You know, we may have lost a partner. Our children have moved away. We don't have a job anymore. We've lost our identity. And all those things, I think, contribute to our feeling of, wow, you know, I'm just not sure anymore.
Linda.
Well, I was just thinking that I know from our physical activity point of view at Active Aging in Manitoba, a lot of times people are hesitant to come out to things because maybe they've had a bad experience in the past. Oh. So if you talk to them about coming to an exercise class, for example, or a walking group, maybe they think back to something that happened in high school or university or after that, and it wasn't a great experience. They didn't enjoy it. And so now you're trying to get them to come out to something like that again, and that's what they think about, right, is that past experience. But certainly when it comes to physical activity, having a buddy is a great system, a great way to get people involved and keep people active.
Yes, Colleen.
I was just going to say, following what Linda said there, just having encouraging people to say, you know what, like you don't, for yoga, you don't have to get down on the mat. You can sit on the chair. We can do chair yoga with you. Yeah. Like it doesn't have to be hard. And I think that one of the things with all of our programming is we absolutely insist that you have fun. So no matter what it is, we absolutely insist that we have fun.
Stacey, as this is part of an overall program that the medical community is very much a big part of, does that help legitimize it in people's minds as well?
I think so. I think it's vetted, right? It's guaranteed information with trusted sources.
And this isn't just a Manitoba initiative either. This is across Canada, indeed across the world, that this kind of work, this kind of thinking is going on.
Yeah, I think you're right when you say thinking, right? I think we need to focus on the thinking of it. It is a global initiative, province to province, east to west. And in Manitoba, we are getting into northern Interlake, eastern, southern Prairie Mountain, and of course Winnipeg Regional as well. And so our electronic medical records are aiming to be in those locations so doctors have those toolkits available to them so our social prescribing can go on to the next link in their communities.
And how long do you think this is going to take? I mean, there's been quite a bit of talk in the media about the medical records being more accessible to the medical community. Is this going to help, obviously, isn't it?
I think so, and I think being here helps, right? I don't know how far our listeners are, but again, wanting to remind them that this movement moves forward with your help, right?
Yeah, can we talk a little bit more about that? I mean, if I'm going to the doctor, you know, regular checkup kind of thing, is there something that I can do that would help get this, give more momentum to this initiative?
Of course, right? I think it's important that everybody advocates for themselves at their doctors. And like Colleen's already mentioned, sometimes you're just a personality who isn't outspoken, right? But I'm asking you to stretch out of your comfort zone and maybe be a little bit more vocal when it comes to acknowledging that you might benefit from having a buddy or a meal or a tea party to look forward to or chair exercises or something that helps you out of your own home, whatever that home looks like, right? We want to create those connections. And I think we can all honestly accept that COVID changed how we lived our lives. And some people, like Colleen said, have gotten even more comfortable with being isolated. And that doesn't need to be the case. So if you're out at your doctor, I'm asking people to start talking about the benefits of your social connections in your world, right? So your world could be whatever community that looks like. It could be your church community, your senior resource coordinator. It could be your senior resource community center, anything that has you feeling connected. So I do invite people to want more, and to reach out and get out of their comfort zone to say, hey, you know, I might benefit from meeting with the Colleen in my area and see what they have to offer. And I also invite the doctors and the medical community to encourage that social connection and see where it takes us.
Do you think that with this program, then, social connections, social prescriptions, the doctors may be more receptive to that kind of approach in the future?
I hope so. I think we're in a bit of a different way of looking at what care looks like. I think for conception was a medical model, and I think we're switching to what complements a medical model, and I think social prescribing complements a medical model.
Especially in the area of prescriptions, wouldn't it? I mean, anything that would reduce the amount of stuff that we have to take has got to be beneficial in some way.
I think so. And I think even the language of the word, right? Mm-hmm. So people are comfortable with receiving a prescription. They are given the idea that that is going to be good for them. I'm going to take this prescription and I'm going to feel better, right? So if you have your medical care offering you a prescription, it's still that prescription. It's just a different way to look at it.
Yes, Linda.
I was just thinking back to a number of years ago where talking to a family physician, and he would always say, we were talking about exercise, and he would always say, oh, yeah, I tell my patients they need to get active. They need to start walking. They need to start running. Join the gym. That was as far as it went, mm-hmm. right? Like, it was just a verbal, you should be doing this. We hear that all the time. This is a lot more formal, like handing them actually a piece of paper, or the Colleens of the world are going to call you and see what they can help you with. So a lot more formal.
So this doesn't put the whole responsibility on the patient to take the initiative. There's
right.
an assist. There's an encouragement.
Yes, exactly.
A process, a procedure.
Yes, yeah.
To kind of reinforce that.
Yeah, which will get them out of that. You know, way of staying home and realizing that this is a recommendation from the medical community. And so maybe I need to take that step. Maybe I need to answer that call when Colleen calls me.
Yes, Colleen.
I was going to say that the work that Stacy and I are doing right now in contacting all the doctors will really help them in making that connection, because they don't know about all the connections. They don't know all the things that are going on in the community. That's not their job. Their job is to heal the patient, but they are now being given, as Stacy said, this new tool. And so they're going to be able to, oh, okay, we don't have to look for all this information. This information is going to be disseminated to our patient by the resource finder.
Okay.
So...
Yes, Stacey.
I was just going to add to what Colleen was saying. I think people get lost in the navigation, right? So if you hand over the navigation to the experts, your job becomes much easier.
Okay. I wonder then if we could talk a little bit about the process. We've touched on various aspects of it, but let's say I'm going in for my yearly checkup, and I've been thinking, well, you know, I'm not doing as much as maybe as I should be, and, you know, too much time on my phone, and I'm watching the news, and that isn't helping my health at all. What happens then? I talk to the doctor, and could you lead me through all the steps it takes to that person becoming more connected to the outside world?
Okay, so the doctor says, you know, I think you could benefit from some connecting with the resource finder. And so they will write out the social prescription, and then it will be faxed to the resource finder.
What will that prescription say?
It will give the name. It will give the telephone number. Sometimes it depends upon who is doing the prescribing. Sometimes it will give a small outline of the patient as what they might wish the resource finder to help the patient with. Sometimes it's just totally open, and so you have to go in and make the contact. So once you get the social prescription in your mailbox.
So the patient has, like it's given out to you, or I'm sorry, the prescription is for the patient, but that information goes to you?
It goes to me.
It goes to you, okay.
And so the prescription actually comes to the resource finder. So you get the facts and you get the information on the client, on the patient. And from there, you make contact. And sometimes it will say, contact a daughter or son. Sometimes it says contact a neighbor. Often it's just to the patient themselves. But once you do that, you make the initial contact and you find out how open that patient is to working with you. So as I was saying before, sometimes you can immediately, like, maybe somebody would really benefit from being part of our volunteer transportation program. And so that often can be very easily assessed on the phone, and then you would go out and do a home visit, sign them up for the transportation program, and then they can make a call into the office when they need a ride, and then a volunteer driver will take them to their appointments. We focus primarily on medical appointments because we just can't, we can't take you for haircuts and you know, pedicures and stuff like that because we don't have enough volunteer drivers. But that's kind of how that works. But it might take a number of phone calls to even get the patient to let you in the door. But if you can make a home visit, that's great because you can assess kind of their physical abilities. You can talk to them. Well, maybe you would benefit from coming out and trying our chair exercises. And so getting them, trying to assess what activity would be best for them. And then once you do that, if they agree to something, then I'll often say, well, I'll meet you. I'll meet you at the class. And we can do this together. And so then that they know that there's going to be a face there that they already know. And then they can go forward on their own. I think every client kind of varies, and so you have to individually assess what would work for them. And we, like I say, we've got all kinds of programs. We've got, you know, art classes, we've got Tai Chi, we've got line dancing, we've got lots of physical things, we've got iPad training. So there's educational, there's physical, there's meal programs, there's transportation. So we also have some self-help groups like vision impaired, hard of hearing, and Alzheimer's caregivers groups. So there's lots of different activities that, that I have at my disposal to suggest.
Now, are these programs all through the senior center, or do you have access to, like, active aging, the sports programs Linda does?
Yeah, for sure. Like, we can refer. All resource finders are, we're a referral hub. So we can refer to any programming that we're aware of. And, and it might be, as Stacy mentioned before, like it might be something that's going on at one of the churches that would be of interest to them. You know, there's several in Transcona. There are several senior groups, like Friendly Settlers, there's a Retired Citizens Organization. So, you know, we can refer to a number of different organizations where they can hook in.
Now, do you have to go through a doctor to get that, or can people contact you directly, or is there how do you link up with these if you're just on your own? If you've heard the program today and go, oh, gee, maybe I should give Colleen a call.
Yeah, for sure. We love people to phone us. it's our life. So our office number is 204-222-9879. And we do have a website. It's Transcona Seniors, all one word, dot CA.
Okay. Now, are there other ways to access the program? Let's say you're not in Transcona. Are there other ways that that you can get linked into this? Linda, you're nodding your head.
Yeah. Well, just in Winnipeg alone, we have 11 senior resource finders. Oh. And then they're all throughout the province as well. So, yes, they offer similar to what Colleen is describing, but it might be slightly different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. There's any area of the city, any area of the province.
And I was just going to say, we're not hard and fast here in Transcona either.
Mm-hmm.
If you live outside the territory and you really want to come, we had one lady coming from, I think it was Charleswood, to do our Scottish country dancing with us.
Really?
Because it's so unique. That might be the only place. Yeah.
Oh, I bet the Blakey family has a big part of that in Scottish heritage in Transcona. That's great. So the access point would be through the senior center, right? Is that initially, if you didn't really know?
Senior center is one way, but as resource finders, like, we are different than the senior centers,
yes.
So there's a number of different avenues. But the number, like the 222-9879 number, we can connect you with wherever you want to go.
You need to go, and Linda, you got some.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, there's a great list of all the senior resource finders on the MASC website. Manitoba Association of Senior Communities website. There's a list there. So no matter where you live in the city, for example, you could look there, or the province.
Yes. And Stacey, what is the website for that? For Manitoba Association of Senior Communities.
ManitobaSeniorCommunities.ca. I was just going to go back, like you said, back a little bit, not backwards, but just back just to that referral form that you mentioned. And I think it's important that when we started to create that form, we didn't put people in boxes, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you are a patient at a doctor's office and doctor has identified food insecurity as your referral purpose. So if we put food insecurity is that one checkbox for that one person, and it goes to Colleen. The referral is then faxed to Colleen. Colleen sees it. She may just focus on food insecurity. She won't, because she's really good at what she does. But you know
that.
Yes. You know, if you put one person in that little box, you might eliminate other options, right? And so Colleen also mentioned the opportunity. So doctor identifies something. Referral form is faxed to Colleen. Colleen sees what the doctor has identified, little checky boxes. But when Colleen goes for that home visit, she might also identify other needs in the home. So she mentioned mobility, but there could be some other needs in the house where she may be able to bring in some supports, hoarding for one, two accessible modifications to the home, those types of things. So just to go back to that form, we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just limiting. We want to encourage. Colleen might sit down and have a conversation with that person and find out they have that brand new car in the garage and they do have a license and they really like to drive, right? And all of a sudden Colleen's like, well, you could be one of our volunteer drivers, right? So we don't want to limit our options when we're working with individuals.
Yeah. So that home visit is a critical part of the process then, isn't it? Do you try and do that everywhere, with everyone?
I try to do that, and I'm really fortunate now in that I have a couple of assistant resource finders working with me, and so we are able to do so much more than one person on their own. So it is really important, and I think one of the things that, and we don't work in isolation as resource finders, we work closely with the Healthy Aging Resource Team, and so if we find something with a client, oh, maybe they would benefit from a visit from the Healthy Aging Resource Team, then we can call them in. We work closely with the support services and group living. And we've got a couple of blocks in Transcona that have those people in, like helping seniors in their block. And so that partnership, we work with Stacy as the community facilitator. So we never work in isolation. We're always partnering.
And it goes back to something that we talked about a little bit earlier, and that was the idea of you work with the families as well. Often they are a major contact?
They are. Sometimes they're the first contact, because they're just beside themselves. They don't know what to do with their parent because they're or relative or just friend. Like sometimes it's a friend or neighbor that is concerned about what's happening for this person. And so they don't have the resources. They don't know where to go. And so they'll come to us and we'll discuss some things that might work. Sometimes in the home visit, concerned person will want to be present, and I think that that's very helpful because then, you know, they can listen to what I'm saying as well and encourage the person to come out and or do more, and, you know. So yeah, it's often not necessarily the senior themselves.
Yes, Linda.
Well, I was just thinking, we often get messages at Active Aging Manitoba, phone calls or emails saying, you know, from a child or a relative who maybe lives, you know, in BC, Quebec, wherever, you know, my mom, my maybe father just passed away, now my mom's on her own, and I realize she's not doing anything. What can you suggest? Do you have any ideas? And usually what I do is reach out to the senior resource finder in that area or give the individual, the family member, the contact for that person and say exactly that, describe what they do and all the resources they have. And often I get emails back saying, well, thanks for connecting, it worked out really well. So yeah, it's another source of a way of getting a referral to the senior resource finders.
I really like that name, actually. The title is Senior Resource Coordinator, but the actual description is this often is a resource finder as much as anything, isn't it?
I just another resource that we have is 211.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. So what is 211?
So 211 is a phone number where individuals can call and they actually speak to a person. So there's no sort of push one for this, two for that. Mm-hmm. They actually connect to a live person and they can say, I live in Transcona and I'd like to join a yoga class, for example. Or I'm looking for a new doctor. I'm looking for a dentist. So the individual on the other end of the phone actually does all that triage work. So they all say, okay, you live in Transcona. There's, you know, a yoga class available here, or I can connect you with the senior resource coordinator in that area. So, and they operate 24/7, 365 days a year. And the beauty of it is you're always getting a live person to talk to. And so 211 is available right across Canada. So you could be living anywhere in Manitoba, for example, and call in and say, my mom lives in Winnipeg and she's looking for somewhere to play cards. And she lives in Transcona or East Caledonia, wherever it is. And they all have that information at their fingertips and be able to supply a contact phone number or an email or a website, for example.
Is that specifically for seniors?
No, it's open to anybody. Yeah, it's open to anybody. Yeah. But the beauty of it is you're actually talking to somebody. So they're doing all that triage work for you as you give them a little more information about what you're looking for.
It really strikes me that the level of commitment and dedication that it takes for this program to work is based on people like yourselves and the volunteers that assist the work that you do. So it's something that's very aspirational. It really is something that people are working together to make people's lives better, their lives, but other people's lives as well. So maybe it's a bit of a dream, but it's based on work that's being done in reality, and maybe this song is a little timely for that as well. That's Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It may not be such a difficult place to get to, a challenging place to get to, but there are people that are actively working to that. And we've been talking a lot about how to get access the information that's out there, how to get into this process of establishing connections with the world around us. And Linda, what if you could just talk about this as well, especially for, we've talked about the 211, and we'll talk about that in a minute as well, more. But we're part of a wider computerized world now as well. Good things and bad things, but there are good things.
Exactly, yes, there are good things from being online, but we know a lot of our older adults are not online, or maybe, you know, I'll say partially online. They're comfortable maybe doing email, but searching for things on the web is maybe not, you know, what they're comfortable doing. So that's where 211 is a great resource, because they do that searching for you. So all you really need for 211 is a phone, and, you know, ask, what area do you live in? What exactly are you looking for? And they will do all that searching for you, so you don't need to be online to do that. And we always have to remember that. You're right, like worldwide, we're going so much online right now, but we do have a lot of people that are not that comfortable online still.
And Colleen, once that initial outreach has been done, that's where it goes over to people like you to actually help with the connecting. And volunteers play a big role in that, do they not?
Volunteers are major. Like, our organizations couldn't survive without our volunteers, and we're always looking for more volunteers, and we sort of suit the volunteer to the job at hand. I think we all need to feel we have a purpose, and no matter what age we are, it's very important to feel that we're contributing and we're part of this, the heartbeat of whatever community that we're in. And so that's one of the things that volunteerism gives us. It's a purpose.
Which is always something that we should have, because without it, what are we really? We're lost,
right,
aren't we?
Right. Yeah.
And this really does make a difference. Yeah. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time that we have today. I'd like to thank our guests who are here today. I want to thank you, Linda, for Linda Brown from Active Aging in Manitoba, for the work that you did to help get this program set up, and all the work that you do as we go through these programs every month. And I especially want to thank our two special guests today, Stacey Boom, who is working with the Manitoba Association of Senior Communities on setting up this program, which is going to make a big difference in a lot of ways to Manitobans' lives, and Colleen Tackleberry, a famous name with an with illustrious background in skates, and which is a connecting activity in itself, I guess, but for the work that you do in Transcona and beyond in keeping people connected. So our next program will be the last Wednesday in July at 12 noon, and Linda will be back for that, and Connie Newman, our other co-host. My name is Jim Feeney. I'm the other co-host of Insights on Connections, Insights on Social Connections, Insights on Social Prescriptions, and I hope you can join us next Wednesday, the last Wednesday in July. For CJNU, FM 93.7, I'm Jim Feeney, and I'm signing off.